thank you very much for the invitation, because I see many points of interest. And I think in continuity with the visit we had, I would like to say that this title, saying urban spaces as public action made durable, one could also say urban spaces as public action made visible. And my idea, and so I was showing these photos at the beginning, because an issue we are working on is how we can detect from what we see in space the ways, the processes which produced that space. So taking space seriously, and these photos were just an introduction to the site I will be discussing about, it's to consider that urban space is the result of public action, which is not just public policies, but it's the action developed by public actors and by private actors. Sometimes these actions are joint, sometimes they are disjoint. And I think from a spatial point of view, it's interesting to have space as an outstanding result of these processes. So I will mainly refer to one site, to one place. And it's one case I've been working a lot in these years and still am. And you see the small red square, and there is a smaller area inside. It's 270,000 square meters, far away from the city center and next to the city borders. So a very peripheral place. But the city is Milano, and the place used to be the former psychiatric hospital of the city. And it's not by chance that it was located up there, far away. It was considered for decades a no-go area, a place nobody would ever think of going there, and it was also impossible to enter it. And in the 50s later, a very large public housing estate was built just next to it. Again, two functions of the modern city, which very often tended to be a bit secluded. So I did research, we made workshops with students on this project, also with Hafen City University and Professor Breckner. And we are now working on this case because we selected it as a case study of for a research for the French ministry. And we considered this as a kind of large-scale urban project. So a bit like the Hafen City, but smaller. So considering that the complexity that you have in such a development is very close to the one you have in other outstanding large-scale projects. So we selected a number in Italy, and this, of course, is the most strange, non-standard one. But the result, in fact, and the surface, it's very relevant. So just a short introduction to something which I think it's a very relevant topic, also something that Italy can be proud of, is the story of institutional spaces and psychiatric hospitals in Italy. So the case I'm discussing about, the hospital was called Paolo Pini. It was built in 1926, and here you see a very old image of the site of the project, and it was developed then along the 20th century, so in several phases. But the concept is very, very strong, and this is interesting also discussing about an industrial space, because it's a very functional space. It's conceived with very strict rules, and you see it's symmetrical. You have a main entrance, which is control, and which is also diagnosis of the patients, and so it's the spot where you enter the institution. And then the whole organization of space is related to the category of illness you have, to the degree, and it's symmetrical because it's man and female. So everything is really very much structured. So it's really a symbol of modern design and of a modern function in the last century city. And in fact, this structure, you find it in Trieste, in the psychiatric hospital of Trieste, which was built a bit earlier in the 1908, or in the very well-known case of the Otto Wagner Spital in Steinhof in Vienna. So all these places tend to have some similarities. They are symmetrical. They have these different steps, normally ending with a church, which was really the last step of the career of the inmates, and then you have the exit next to the church. And they are generally organized as parks with pavilions. So a very large compound with a park, green areas, very well designed, and different pavilions. It's also interesting to consider that there was a very positivistic and very progressive idea behind the design and construction and organization of psychiatric hospital, because it was like recognizing a dignity to the mentally ill and to set up a space which was dedicated. It was a kind of place for care. The intentions at the beginning were very progressive. And these places were normally organized as cities within cities, or the idea was to reproduce inside these compounds all the functions you may normally desire to have in a city. So schools, libraries, churches, workshops, green areas. So the whole existence could develop inside. One major issue, which is the same all over the world, is that they are machines which are working so well, and the demand, they are a very good solution, a very efficient solution, if you consider that the solution for mental illness. And the tendency is always that they become overcrowded. So what was fought for a limited number of people then becomes crowded. And this is a trend which you recognize all over the world. An interesting issue also for industrial areas or for vacant areas is fences. Because in a psychiatric hospital, fences were, of course, fought to keep the inmates in, but also and to protect them so that they could not escape, they could not get into danger. But also, of course, it's a way to protect the city and to keep the city outside. So this issue of fences is very strong. And here we have some very old images of the different functions which were displayed inside, the different services that were organized inside the hospitals. And this is one of the image which recall our attention to the fact that the definition of total institutions, which was given by Erving Goffman, was considering psychiatric hospitals, asylums, as well as prisons, you know, as places which were mainly places for containing bodies and not places for care. So the history of Italian policies for mental health, it's quite a relevant one, because it's the place where this word deinstitutionalization was introduced. And here you see a first image. Let's say that it was a policy, deinstitutionalization, which made psychiatric hospital vacant spaces. I think it's interesting to think that it's not industrial change, it's not economic change, but it's a national policy that makes these places which are somehow useless, or they don't have their original function anymore. It's a public decision. And this reform has a very interesting story. It started in Trieste in 1971, and it was originated by a movement of people led by a very renowned psychiatrist, who is Franco Basaglia, who was Franco Basaglia. And the main idea was to transform the policies for mental health, declaring that, assessing also from the medical point of view, that these places were not producing health, but were reproducing illness. And from this statement on, to reconsider policies for mental health, starting with the, let's say, the denial of the institution, saying this institution is not allowed anymore for civil issues of civil rights. This institution cannot exist anymore. And this is really interesting also for planners and architects and social workers, because if you say this institution is not allowed anymore and it's not working, then you have to think of all the rest. So that place is not available anymore. These people cannot live there anymore. And you have to organize, literally, you know, everything which is needed to substitute that function. And this, I think, it's really interesting for a discourse on city development. So, for example, you had to organize homes, places to stay, and all sorts of different arrangements which could allow people who were former inmates to have a normal life. or to organize work, which could be real work with money, not just occupational therapy inside the place, or to organize mental health services. So mental health, mental illness was not denied by itself, but other kind of services had to be organized where the people, close to the people, housing areas. And of course, the issue of social life was regained as a right of these inmates. And then an issue which is more close to our focus is what has been done in these former hospitals, in these very large areas. So the pavilions, in many cases, were left empty for a time because of all sorts of bureaucratic issues, because of a very important issue, which was land property, who was owning the building, who was owning the land, different agencies, public agencies with different attitudes, who had different ideas on how to reuse, redevelop these areas. These areas were built outside the city, but very often they turned out to be in an interesting area because the city had developed, so somehow they were more attractive. And one line of suggestion for this debate is to consider that the development in any case has been always very slow. There was never a single project on the whole area. As we will see, the reuse of these different buildings took a lot of time and was a progressive use with a lot of temporary solutions. So my proposal is to consider Paolo Pini, the psychiatric hospital in Milano, as a second-hand space in all sense, as you intended. And it's a situation in which one after the other, all the pavilions have been emptied, and now we can say all the pavilions have been reused. The reuse of this building occurred according to a very incremental process, and they have been very much affected by the complexity of the property assets. No major and comprehensive project was ever developed on the area. No one ever took or sat together around the table to discuss about the development of the whole compound. No demolition was ever done, and no new building was ever built. The pavilions have been reconverted into the most various uses by a variety of different actors. So you have now the seat of local health offices, a recreational center with a huge football field, a high school, a normal high school, a major public dentist center, which is very qualified, a hospice or a palliative station for acutely ill people, a service for homeless run by a charity, assisted flats for mentally ill people, and then, and this is the most interesting part for our discussion, a variety of activities which are run, designed, organized by Olinda. And Olinda is an NGO, a social enterprise, an association, which has been very active in the area. And these functions and these reuse of the buildings have been activated following partial, limited, and non-coordinated decisions. This, I think, it's a very challenging issue for planners like I am, because normally we tend to think that coordination and planning and a whole design is relevant. I think it's interesting to use and to discuss a case like Paolo Pini. Now, also, I should relate it to the context of the city of Milano, but now I would say it's so good to have an area of the city in which planning was not so much relevant. It was really happening on the side of the public debate on planning. It was not even recognized that year after year this development was occurring. Most of my colleagues at Politecnico di Milano have no idea of the process. They know the place because they maybe go there and use it, but they have no idea of how it developed. I don't know why this right photo turns black and white. It was colored. So here you have, on the left, you have an image, a map of the whole area, the whole compound, and you see the buildings. On the right, and you have to consider that there were one single function, psychiatric hospital, one single property, one single institution, one single organization, like an industry. And now on the right, you would see the whole variety of colors, which are corresponding to different functions, and especially to different actors who are involved. The property is still 100% public. It's a very specific case, but the point is that it's different sorts of public, it's different public agencies, and they have very different interests, very different attitude. They never found an agreement on a single direction, also for political, because they have different political orientations. The province, the health agency, a hospital, so they are all public actors, but the use they make of their property is very different. So in this colored landscape, Olinda stands out as a main key actor, and from my perspective, is definitely the most innovative actor you see there. Olinda was founded in 1995 as a non-profit association employing more than 50% disadvantaged people. So it's really stemming out from the institutionalization as an organization which is providing jobs and has as a rule the fact that minimum 50% of the people with a long-term position shall be people with some sort of disadvantage. And they promote a very broad range of initiatives and services which are targeting mental health but in a very broad sense, which is on the one hand providing jobs and job insertion for people with mental problems, so like training, for example, and supporting people to find a job afterwards. And on the other, avoiding any specialistic attitude and involving a variety of publics and of activities. So again, many would never think that Olinda is working on mental health. Many would just think Olinda is working on cultural events, on food, on all sorts of activities, because it's an economic enterprise, non-profit, but it's following this approach, which is like very, very open to a large public. So this was really a strategy also of Olinda. As you could see, the place is very remote, and it's next to this very large public housing, which was always quite troubled. The idea and the strategy of Olinda was, especially in the first years, never to relate to the local. Again, a big provocation for planners who are always trying to define local networks, to work on local development, to find good resources on the site, to bring them in, and to recognize capabilities. Well, they, and we are doing a lot of interviews to all the different people of Olinda, they had the feeling they didn't have the energy to work with such a local, complex situation. And they felt they were alone in this process, and that they were already dealing with a very, very stigmatized place. It was a no-go area. Nobody would ever think about going there for anything. And they were dealing with former inmates, people who have been living for years inside the hospital. So it was a big challenge. And this whole public housing area was demanding a lot of attention, a lot of energies that they felt they would never find. So their strategy was to step out of this local context and to think that the only way they could have to open up the place was to work on very high levels of quality in whatever they were producing. And for example, they started with recognizing the potentials of this area being so large, so with a lot of open space, and in the city of Milano this is quite a rare condition. So they started to organize large events, concerts involving very renowned artists, pop singers, rock singers, and finding ways to bring people in even without explaining anything, just organizing public events in the site. And this was a very strategic attitude to raise the awareness about the potentials and the attractiveness of this place in the city. So since 1996, Olinda promotes a main summer festival under the title Von Nahe gesehen ist niemand normal, which is really a very now it's really a brand in Milano. It's very renowned and it's very high quality. And it's theater, dance, cinema, many premieres of very good quality theater pieces have been displayed in the festival. And it's a summer festival for theater, which normally doesn't happen. The theater are working in Milano in the winter time. So it turned out to be a big success. But Olinda is worried, they also are worried about the whole year, not just on the summer months, which are for them the easiest because the place has always been very attractive. So in the years they developed a bar, a slow food restaurant, a renowned citywide catering service, a very successful hostel, and a theater, so a covered theater. The bar and the restaurant are located in the former morgue, so the place where the dead people were put. So this was one of the first projects. The hostel is located in the previous small cloister where the nuns used to live. They were working as nurses. And the theater is located in the former mensa. So these activities have a very complex story. They were growing because of all sorts of different fundings, different sources of money. Sometimes it was money for the insertion, job insertion of mentally ill people. So, for example, they decided to work to improve competences in the building sector so that they could use this activity of training to restore the restaurant, for example, to make physical work, which normally, so these physical interventions were never funded directly, but always very much indirectly through other sources of policies. So it's a situation in which you have social policies which have been funding physical intervention, which is very rare. Normally it's more the opposite. And one of the last activities which started a few years ago is urban gardening. And this turned out to be like a final step in which, after regaining the attention of the whole city and succeeding in bringing here people from the city and the region, now the neighborhood finally is very much involved, because now the image also of the place is changed so much that it's not more a stigma and no-go area, but it's considered for the public housing neighborhood kind of proud to be close to the Polo Pini, because they recognize it as a positive image. And so stepping into Paolo Pini to do urban gardening is being now one of the most successful initiatives involving people from the neighborhood. And here you see some of the interventions that Olinda was responsible for, like opening a new gate. This was a secondary gate and it's now a main entrance. Organizing very large events and happenings. Cultural events, these are images from the summer festival. So the bar and the restaurant are working as very normal bar and restaurant during the week. And in the weekend, of course, they attract a different kind of public. During the week, they are the canteens of the people who are working in the other institutions which are based in the hospital. This is the hostel, so offices which are inside the space. So after all these years, we can consider that Paolo Pini altogether can be recognized de facto as a large-scale urban project, which was never set on the maps of urban development in Milano. But the reuse and the redesign of single spaces occurred one after the other, very often through trial and error. The story of Olinda is full of mistakes, and they are kind of proud of telling about them. Temporary, and so I don't know how to explain, but it's I think it's Fischernutzung. It's much more interesting when it's considered not just a temporary use, which is very fragile, but something which is a kind of testing of the possibility of using that space. That's what they have been really good in doing. And the advantage that Olinda declares, of course, is that a second-hand space, and this has some very good qualities, but also this building, of course, is that there is the availability of a physical capital. So what a social enterprise would never have, the money to buy or to rent a space at the beginning. So this was a capital which they exploited very much. And of course, this in this case was due also to the fact that there was public property, and very often it was not a public will or a public policy to support it, but it was just someone who pretended not to see what was going on, and that was already fine. So Linda was good in settling in spaces which were not interesting for the public bodies. One point which I think it's interesting, considering I thought that Pini is a very large compound, but of course if I look here, it's much larger, is to consider that Olinda is covering only 1/6 of the whole compound, of the whole area. I would say they don't have the energy, the power that they would really need to change the scale of their organization to use more. So they use 1/6 of the building, and in summer, of course, they use much more of the open space. But most of the buildings in the Paolo Pini are reused for more ordinary activities somehow, with a variety of destinations mainly related, as you saw, to health services. Not all of them are innovative. Some are there, but are working as they would work anywhere else. But some of them benefit a lot from the quality and different uses of the place. For example, the hospice for palliative care. The director was explaining that since they moved there, the whole organization is working in a different way because they can enjoy of a different surrounding. And the hospice can be located in a hospital, or it can be located like here in a space in which a lot of other things are happening around. So these ordinary uses somehow have granted the coverage of public capital, which has been reinvested in the area. So not always with innovative intention, but taking care of these buildings, which were really, really many, allows now to have the whole area under use. And one issue which remains is the maintenance of the open space, of the public spaces, the green area, which is very relevant because the park is old, you have huge trees, it's very much designed, and nobody feels in charge. I mean, that is a cost. Nobody really looks at the park as they recognize it's a potential, but they don't feel responsible for that, and especially nobody pays the maintenance of this green area, which is a big paradox. And the city itself, it's not doing it until now because it's not property of the city. So it's not on the map of green areas of Milano, although it's fully accessible. That's becoming for us a main also perspective, because many start to recognize that this is a very special park. So it's a green area, but with extraordinary qualities because of public access, but also because of the variety of, because it's built. It's not just a green area, but it's a built green area. I would turn to the end with some key learnings, which I think it's key learning from Stadtentwicklung in Milano, and probably there may be some interest also here. A first point is related to the fact that Paolo Pini was a total institution, so a lot of work had to be done to change the mindset. This was the image of this place was very, very strong and very, very negative, and the place was very much functionalized. I think this can be also the situation of an industry. Everybody has a certain idea, a certain perspective, and very often these are places which were not accessible to those who were not working there or living there. A second point is that, on these, of course, in what you learn in Paolo Pini is that all the projects are not projects which start on the physical environment. They start on they are driven by uses, by ideas, by activities, and the space is used as a capital, as a resource, but the involvement of people, of different actors, starts with the organization of activities. So what was really relevant is to have concepts for new forms of organization of activities in there. This doesn't mean that design or planning or architecture is not relevant, because if you could catch something from the image of images of Olinda, they have a kind of obsession for aesthetics. And this is also one main reference for the deinstitutionalization movement. It's like to change, to bring these people out of the asylum also means to regain the right to beauty, and to have decent life means also beautiful objects, beautiful environment. And so this, for Linda, it's very much a kind of obsession. If you look at their spaces, they always try to have a very innovative character, and they never give up in spending money on upgrading the quality of the places. And this, of course, requires a different attitude to design and planning, which is starting very much from the needs and the uses and not from the physical element by itself. So it's Pini is really teaching a lot about incrementalism, which may be considered a kind of very trendy and abstract methodological approach. But in this case, incrementalism was a must because, for example, funding never came all together. Funding just came piece by piece, year by year. So every intervention had to be, so there was a long-term strategy, long-term project, but the funding was always allowing very small steps. So they became very good in setting priorities also to make places available, accessible, and then in this managing such a process, any sort of leadership is somewhere needed. And I think it can be in the city administration, it can be in the national government, it can be in the local organization, but having worked on some of these cases in Italy of psychiatric hospital, you recognize that somewhere there is someone who takes the lead and designs, has in mind the long perspective. And it's capable, on the one side, of imagination, so of going far beyond the possibilities you may see at the moment, and which is able to develop, I'm quoting Appadurai, who is an Indian anthropologist, he uses the word capability to aspire. So being capable to have an aspiration, which is going much beyond the needs of the present. And these three images are in the same place. It's the same, it's in a building. You see here, we were there with a workshop with students. It's students from Milano, students from Hamburg. We were there for 15 days, and students were living there. Many were afraid at the beginning to be in such a place in which still people are living. So it was quite an involving workshop. But we were quite impressed in this situation. The person sitting there, it's Thomas Emmenegger, and he's the president of Olinda. He's a Swiss psychiatrist. Who came to Italy because of the movement and remained in Italy. So he's leading Olinda. And we decided to use this space for a kind of a meeting with Thomas. And he was describing this space, which is very similar to this. This was the former Mensa. It was an empty space in which you still could see pots and things from the old use. And he was literally describing the space as a theater. With going very much into details, like an architect could do or a director. So he was describing this space as a theater, and that was the meeting with him. He didn't tell much more. He was just describing this theater. And I remember, so he was very effective in this description. And I clearly remember the feeling while we were going out to see some students, Milanese and from Hamburg, they were just saying, he's nuts. So they were really incapable, not just to understand that that was his tricky way to bring them, to involve them, but they could really not figure out that that space could work as a theater. So since then, we started to work and discuss with them because they were both architects and planners, not just planners. And it seemed so impossible for them to develop a basic concept, and Zwischennutzung was not yet, this was in several years ago, it was not yet such an issue. So I'm very glad that it became. But they were completely incapable to follow his discourse. And of course, this is now a theater, and because it's not a summer stage, but it's a real theater. No, you have so it's completely in the rules for fire emergency, for whatever rule it's available. And they are using it for premieres on TV shows. So I think this capability of going far beyond what you could figure out, it's an attitude that architects and planners, of course, should have, but very often we realize at university that it's not yet there. Thank you.
Sie sagten, eine größere Entwicklung dieser Art bräuchte immer jemanden, der das leitet, der die Vision hat. Jetzt sagten Sie aber, Olinda hatte nur ein Sechstel der Flächen. Aber Olinda hatte auch die hauptverantwortliche Leitung für das ganze Projekt. Wie ist das denn gelaufen mit den, ich meine, da war ja noch eine Schule dabei, also noch andere Institutionen, die vielleicht auch ganz andere Absichten hatten. Und Sie sprachen ja bereits an, dass zum Beispiel die Pflege der öffentlichen Grünflächen ein Problem war. Wie oft tritt in einer solchen großen Immobilienentwicklung denn noch das Problem, the tragedy of the commons, also das Problem der Allmendegüter ein? Also wie wurde das gelöst, dass alle sich an diesem gemeinsamen Pool, an der gemeinsamen Verantwortung beteiligen?
Yes, one by the Olinda is using 1/6 of the buildings, but they are not leading the project. So no, they are not leading the interventions on the whole area. They have been developing their own projects with a very broad attitude, and this is the social responsibility they take. No? So the way they use space, it's always kind of reversible. It's always opening up and never closing, and so on. But they have no responsibility. They are tenants. Very often they don't pay a rent, but they are tenants. They don't have any property. While the other users, the other decisions are taken by property owners somehow. No? And for example, the high school, it's a normal high school, but has a focus on agriculture. So they are using some areas outside of the compound for training the high school students. And it's the only school in Milano with this kind of orientation, so it's quite an interesting one. But when it was developed after the closure of the psychiatric hospital, the first thing that the province of Milano did was to set a fence. So when you... there is one image. So if you go there and you visit the place, you see... it's all on the right-hand side. You have people walking along this path, and on the side, in the right in the mid of the area, you have a fence, a metal fence, which is closing off. So the tragedy of the commons is there, and that's the high school, which is in this moment it's a very positive actor, very good teachers, very involved. They are working a lot also with the neighborhood and so on. But the fence is there because it was the first bureaucratic decision that the province took, again to protect students, of course. So for safety reasons, they just cut off part of the park so that when you are there, you don't even recognize that the school is inside the compound because of this fence. So there are many, many issues at stake, which show how the more you get closer, the more you see the tragedies, and you can still try to work on them. To discuss about the demolition of the fence could be an issue if the orientation to work on the park will be taken in by the politicians, for example, the city politicians.
Was heißt denn Zwischennutzung auf Italienisch? Und wird der Begriff auch von den Olinda-Leuten benutzt, oder?
Riuso temporaneo. Riuso, like reuse, temporaneo, temporary. No, the Olinda people would never use it. They hate the word governance. They hate the word riuso temporaneo. In a way, I think you can understand why. So of course, governance, this is a case 2 years ago when governance was everywhere. I mean, it was very trendy. We could have discussed this as a very perfect case of governance in which you have a multitude of actors and so on. Now governance disappeared, and we are much more keen on responsible actors. And so I'm joking to say that Olinda, a bit like you are doing, it's really taking responsibility. It's not just playing in the debate. So because they have responsibility on the people they are working with, I mean, it's a social, it's an economic enterprise. They have to grant the fact that these people have a job. So that's their first mission, which they don't, I mean, that they never declare it in public, but that's their main activity. You know? And on top of that, they develop a cultural work or work on urban transformation. So for them, temporary, it's like putting space on trial, testing possibilities of reuse, but with the idea that the use will be there. They are not really ready to think that it's a light use. It's just setting the conditions to develop something.
Ich fand das sehr spannend, wie Sie gezeigt haben, dass eine andere Produktion von psychischer Gesundheit den Raum verändert. Ist tatsächlich eine andere Produktion gewesen, weil die Gedanken so waren, dass man anders produzieren muss. Wir sind ja jetzt auch in der Situation, dass auch die Städte anfangen, anders zu werden. Man überlegt, ob man Straßen wieder zubaut und Gehwege draus macht oder mehr Parks macht oder sowas. Also eine andere Denkweise führt dazu, dass auch die Räume sich verändern. Und in dem Zusammenhang hätte ich gerne mal gewusst, was Sie über Wunschmaschinen denken.
Entschuldigung, das ist der letzte.
Über Wunschmaschinen. Mhm. Sie deuten ja ein bisschen an, dass wenn man anders denkt, dass dann auch sowohl das Handeln als auch die Räume sich ändern.
If I got your point, I want to show a photo again, but I can't see it. I think, for example, this the wishes of the people, what people want, I'm convinced it's very much depending on what you offer. What is the offer? Of course, this we should probably learn a bit from advertisement. But like in this situation, for example, the issue not just of urban gardening, but the kind of green you have inside, the way they take care more and more of small spaces of green inside the park, it's so different from the way the green is treated in the public housing area, which is altogether, it's not so bad. It's quite an interesting modern project, this whole housing estate, but green is in the very typical conditions of modern public housing estate, so it's really a very flat surface and nobody is really using it because it's kind of separate. It's a green surface. Nobody feels an involvement. So now the offer of these different ways of dealing with green, it's creating a completely different perspective also in the housing estate. These people want a different green now. They're not asking for green because they have a lot. They are asking for a better quality of green. They think of quality in terms of uses, not just of aesthetics.
Ja, vielen Dank für den Vortrag. War sehr spannend, auch das auch so ein Großprojekt mal gezeigt zu bekommen und wie das eigentlich auch ganz gut, so wie der Vortrag es rübergebracht hat, auch ganz gut geklappt hat. Ich habe eine Frage zu der Nutzungsmischung, weil Sie haben angesprochen, es gab die Ordinary Activities und Ordinary Public Services, die es immer noch gibt und es sind neue Nutzungen dazugekommen und das wurde prozesshaft entwickelt und auch per Trial-and-Error-Verfahren und ich würde gerne wissen, da sind sehr viele neue Nutzungen dazugekommen und es gibt neue Möglichkeiten, den Ort wieder zu beleben, neu zu denken, neu zu gestalten. Aber es gibt auch, glaube ich, ziemlich viele Konflikte, die daraus entstehen. Und da würde ich gerne mal hören, also was geht nicht an solchen Orten? Was ist nicht gegangen? Gab es Konflikte und wo sind die Probleme aufgetreten bei dem Projekt?
Yes, for example, big trouble Olinda had with ordinary economic activities which would attract a normal public. Normal intending, you know, anybody. because in fact nobody going along the street would ever see. So this place is not visible. It's not on the street. And the bar had big troubles at the beginning. The restaurant, even if it was a slow food restaurant, had big troubles at the beginning because the people would not see it. Only people who would know it would go there. And that's also something on which they worked a lot to open up their networks, because it would have been very easy to have all those people socially responsible, interested in mental health, or a bit intellectuals to gather there. Let's go to the periphery, while Milano is very much focused on the center. They didn't want this. They wanted a very vital economic activity, but with a broad public. And this was very difficult. And there were many conflicts, of course, also because the surrounding was not ready for some uses. So to have big events which block the traffic for a whole evening and night, this was completely unexpected by the area. There were conflicts at the beginning against this. So one way in which Olinda developed economic activities which are autonomous, which can run, was to make them more and more complementary. So like the theater, the hostel, and the restaurant, you could think it's a congress center. It doesn't look like what we think it's a congress center, but in fact, there are companies who come there to train in the theater, they live in the hostel, and now the place is very much connected. This also, it's a big difference, because before it was very far away from the city. It was difficult to reach with public transport. Now you have a new metro station just 200 meters, which they fear a bit, because now the other owners of the place, the other public agencies, now they realize the potentials of a place which has a good image and in which real estate values are much higher because of the new metro station. So now it's far more accessible, but also much more at risk of different perspectives. And in this sense, the mix of uses, it's also limited by the fact that the Flasche Nutzung plan never changed. So it's still declared as a space, as a plot for public services. And this, at the beginning, also during the research, we realized this was a big luck, because in the situation Milano was in the last 20 years, a crazy planning, a planning disaster, this was a big luck because it preserved the real estate value remained low, and these crazy institutions could just locate ordinary public services. So you don't have a big variety of uses, but you have now the possibility. The transformation was slow, and there was no decision to change it. This was a big luck.
Also, es ist vielleicht mehr ein Statement als eine Frage. Und da schlüpfe ich mal oder bin jetzt mal ganz in der Rolle als einer von den Vieren, die diesen Kongress auch thematisch mit konzipiert haben. Sie haben das eben so schön gesagt, ein Entwicklungsprozess, also der Entwicklungsprozess dieses Areals wurde maßgeblich getragen von den Nutzern und auch den Bürgern. Und ich glaube, das ist so ein bisschen, bringt genau das auf den Punkt, was wir als Kern auch von dieser Themenwahl des Kongresses gesehen haben, weil uns die Idee sehr beschäftigt, inwiefern das eigentlich eine besondere Qualität von Partizipation ist oder eine gewisse Stufe von Partizipation. Herr Willinger hatte ja schon die Leiter gezeigt, die, glaube ich, mal in den 60er Jahren entwickelt wurde von dem Herrn Arnstein. Und uns geht es, glaube ich, zum Teil damit, und das versuchen wir auch mit unserer Arbeit zu leisten, darum, diese Qualität zu ermöglichen. Und das steht erstmal vor dem Aspekt der Quantität, weil ja auch aufgekommen ist heute oder kritisiert wurde, das gilt nur für 1% oder ist überhaupt nur wenigen möglich, Menschen, die die Fähigkeit haben, solche Prozesse zu tragen. Das steht komplett außer Frage. Und es geht auch nicht darum zu diskutieren, inwiefern kann das andere Partizipationsmethoden, die die Stadtentwicklung gebracht hat, ersetzen, genau wie Sie auch gesagt haben, Zwischennutzungen oder solche Räume ersetzen auch nicht andere Planungselemente. Es ist eine Ergänzung. Aber was vielleicht doch noch eine interessante Frage ist, ist, inwiefern daran vielleicht auch ein Handlungsansatz für die Stadtentwicklung, für die Verwaltung auch liegen kann, gerade angesichts mangelnder Ressourcen in der Verwaltung, angesichts Personalabbau, indem man sagt, vielleicht diese total intensiven, zeitintensiven und kostenintensiven Partizipationsprozesse können wir nicht leisten überall, aber vielleicht können wir mehr der Selbstorganisation im wahrsten Sinne des Wortes Raum geben. Das wäre zumindest einer der Gedanken, der bestimmt sich lohnt noch zu vertiefen. Auf der anderen Seite, um das jetzt auch gleich ein bisschen zu problematisieren und dann käme ich auch zu meiner Frage, ist, darin liegt natürlich auch damit auch ein Handlungsansatz hin zu einer Governance, in dem man sehr klar gucken kann, welche Räume werden angeboten, wo lasse ich das zu, und wenn das Ganze dann ausschließlich auf der Basis von Zwischennutzung, also auch noch auf Zeit passiert, dann kann ich das auch ganz schnell wieder beenden, wenn mir das nicht passt, was die Bürger da eigentlich anstellen. Und ja, da würde ich fragen, ist das einer der Gründe, warum Governance so ein Unwort geworden ist, auch bei der Organisation dort vor Ort, oder warum ist das so ein Unwort bei der NGO, die da tragend war?
It was a bit more a joke on the use of the term, no? Because like if we say participation, I'm sure that if we would be with the Olinda people, they would also say we don't like participation, which is their own radical way, no, to say, of course, I mean, if we work with the mentally ill and we want them to be out of Nazan, of course, no, that's a very radical approach, to have people participating to their own life. So that's a basic principle, and I think this is very interesting to take it out from policies for mental health and to see how radical this is, no, because it's really considering these people, no, to be involved in their own in decisions on their own life. Where do you want to live? What kind of job are you able to do? And so on. So this is a degree of participation which in the ladder we look at, it's in the sky. So this, I think this, no, we have to realize this. So when they discuss or the strategies they use are very much grounded on this radical attitude in considering that, of course, the involvement of people in things which are related to them, it's absolute. But I have to recognize that the challenge also for me, when I say leadership, when I use the word leadership, is to recognize that on these very sensitive issues, and I think that planning and real estate are sensitive issues, sometimes you recognize that you need to have someone, which is not maybe one person, but possibly a movement, which takes responsibility and stands out as someone who is taking responsibility for a process and has an idea, has straight ideas, which are breaking some conservative attitudes. And these conservative attitudes are not just of the politicians, but also are very often of the vast majority of the people. So we made interviews in the housing estate. It was very clear if they would have a referendum 20 years ago asking, shall we open the asylum or not? Shall we open the psychiatric hospital? Of course, all these 70,000 people living there would have vote for a no, and in this situation, and this would have been anywhere in Italy and in Europe. So on such issues, on some decisive issues, also in planning, I think that it's very relevant to recognize that somewhere you may have a responsible institution or a responsible organization which is working not just on the light side, but on the very complex elements of decisions, and work to raise the quality of the debate, works to create the conditions for participation, which is allowing people to have a say, but having a knowledge and being very much aware of the consequences of decisions, which very often is not the case. You can involve people and I've been very often afraid of the fact that people would be involved in decisions without having an understanding of the matter. So this, and governance was very often a way to spread responsibilities, and at the end you don't understand anymore who is the responsible for some decision. And this It's a risk.
Okay. Jemand eine Frage? Danke. Ich würde gerne wissen, ob das, man sieht hier in dem Bild den Zaun noch so schön, ob es gelungen ist, die Leute, die um das Gelände rumherum wohnen, ob da eine Beziehung entstanden ist oder ob das ein abgeschlossener Raum geblieben ist in Bezug auf die Leute, die drumherum wohnen und die eben lange Zeit keine Möglichkeit hatten, da irgendwie reinzukommen.
Ich habe nicht verstanden.
Okay, ich wollte wissen, ob es zwischen den Bewohnern der Nachbarschaft um das Gelände herum eine Beziehung, ob da eine Beziehung besteht zwischen dem, was auf dem Gelände passiert und den Menschen, die außen rum wohnen.
Ja, ja. So the image now is showing the fence of the high school, just to show you how strong it is. It's a bit old. I mean, this fence was one of the first decisions to be made. So the high school is a positive, interesting use, but the fence is there, and you see how strong it is. The relation of the people in the housing estate changed very much along these years, and it's a matter of qualification of the debate and of changing of the image they have. It's not just the image. It's much more. It's like, on one hand, the uses of Paolo Pini slowly changed the whole character of the area, and the people who live there are the ones who are more aware. Before they said, I live in Comasina, now they say, I live close to Paolo Pini. So the identity of the place is changed with very good reasons, no? Because, I mean, there are very renowned actors coming to play there, and in Milano you don't have any other theater who is out of the city center. And just to make an example, but also on very daily uses, like now all the people, I'm laughing because I have an aunt who lives there. So I have her story since I was a child about this place. And there is a say, like if you are a bit strange, they would have told you some years ago, I take you to Paolo Pini, so like Steinhof in Vienna. So it's really a very strong stigma. And now one day she said, ah, yes, I have garlic from Paolo Pini. I said, what does it mean? Because a friend of her is cultivating in the gardens inside, and now they have local products. So there is a whole range of different uses which have been differently involving people from the city or more and more from the local area. But in an interview we made to the neighborhood committee, they were like saying, when we asked about the perspectives, they said, we think Paolo Pini should become an urban park. I said, what do you mean with urban park? I said, well, not a neighborhood park. This is a park which has qualities which go beyond the qualities you normally have. So and it's reachable with the metro. And we were impressed because they were very generous in thinking that the rest of the city, you know, should have access to something which is next to them, but it's not just a local resource.